I think it's a great thing that we have in every county of the state, all 72 counties, we have a UW Extension office. And in many of those county extension offices, we have a horticulture educator. Not in every one, but in quite a few of them. We're lucky here in Dane County to have Lisa Johnson. Lisa is UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County, but she takes time out of her schedule to come and sort of be the home horticulture educator for the whole state of Wisconsin once in a while when she comes on the program. And she's here with me. I'm looking right at her right now, and she's happy to answer your questions. If you've got some gardening questions, maybe it's the flowers or the vegetables, or it might be the lawn or tree, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post, hey, if you've got a great garden shot, I'd love to see that. Or if you've got a question, you can just post it right there. And to get to that Facebook page, you go to The Larry Mueller Show. And Lisa Johnson, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
We have what kinds of questions? You get questions this time of year from?
Oh yeah.
What are they asking?
Well, right now, people are kind of looking forward to dealing with the residual effects of the drought from last year.
Yeah.
So I'm getting questions about, okay, I lost a bunch of my lawn last year. Do you have any recommendations on what I should put there or types of grass seed? People who have lost trees or shrubs or have damage to them are asking how to deal with that. And I've got people who are already looking forward to the Japanese beetles this June or July and are asking what to do because last year they had such a problem with them.
Miserable time.
Yeah, they are miserable little insects.
So that's going on. Did you see, now this may be, I don't know if this is a fair question or not. Probably not. But what have you seen or is there anything new out there in the way of flowers or newly recommended flowers or vegetable varieties that people might, think, oh, I might want to try those?
Oh, gosh, there's lots of new stuff
of new
every
stuff
year.
Yeah.
And in fact, some of our educators and other people in the industry are talking about the fact that because the consumer market expects new things every year, that sometimes things get released a little sooner than they should.
Oh.
And so sometimes your plant doesn't look like the picture in the catalog. Ed Lyon from Allen Centennial Gardens has a great talk about that.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
So, always with the new, you want to be, I guess you don't want to plant your whole garden to...
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Arlene in New Berlin has a question for you, so let's go to her. Hi, Arlene.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I don't know if you'll be able to help me. When we bought our house, there was a tree in the center of the property in the back on the south side that we took out because it just was in the way.
Yep.
And it was a dirty tree. And now I am getting tunnels in my backyard, and I'm wondering what I need to do to get rid of it. Do I need to tear up the whole lawn, or...
Did you say tunnels?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, but that has nothing to do with the tree, probably.
Are they...
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the tree. What I'm saying is, why am I all of a sudden getting these tunnels? It's driving me nuts.
You can
almost trip over them.
Yeah, it could be moles that typically is what we think of when we see either raised areas that are linear or serpentine sort of in the ground, or when there are tunnels. And moles will feed on things like Japanese beetle grubs, worms, other insects, and unfortunately they do love to get into our flower and vegetable beds, but also the lawns. We have a great publication on moles that is at the Learning Store site, and you may want to check that out.
Okay.
It has some recommendations on how to get rid of them. There are some traps that can be used, and also if you don't have a lot of pets in your yard that you have to worry about, there are some baits as well. But the traps are recommended as the most effective thing. But if you have a problem with Japanese beetle grubs, you can expect to have things with problems with moles and also skunks. Skunks will sometimes come in and redecorate your yard digging for grubs.
And they're really nasty.
Yeah. I'd rather have the mole.
That's nice to know. Thank you very much for your help.
Okay. Yep. Good luck with that.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. There is a great way to get rid of them. We talk about it once in a while on the show. And once we get closer to the season, I'll talk about the barrel, the bacon, and the rat trap.
It sounds like a rock band.
which really works well. You can get rid of those moles without injuring your cat or your dog.
Yeah. You know,
that's the thing. Dee in West Bend, hi. Thank you for calling. Dee, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
I wanted to know for a new market gardener in southeast Wisconsin if you could suggest some one or two varieties of melons to grow.
Muskmelon, watermelon?
Cantaloupe.
Both cantaloupe, cantaloupe, muskmelon, and watermelon I'm interested in, but I'm really interested in saving seed as well.
Okay, that's going to be a problem for the cucurbits. Unless you have a variety that is an heirloom variety, such as the Amish Moon and Stars, with the cucurbits, the amount of cross-pollination that you have usually means that your seeds are not going to come true, and so you might get something that might not be so palatable to eat. We do have some varieties of cantaloupe and watermelon that do okay here. With our short growing season, they're not necessarily the easiest thing to grow, but we do have success, particularly in years like last year when we have an early start to the season. Seed saving for cucurbits, again, unless it's an heirloom variety, you won't have a whole lot of luck with that.
Right. But do you know any heirloom? I mean, you know, like...
The Amish Moon and Stars is good. That one works. It's just most of the melons and so on that I'm aware of are hybrids, and so the hybrids, you can't really save the seeds. There are a lot of great varieties. I mean, there's we have the personal sized ones like Tiger Baby and Yellow Doll that are, you know, the yellow fleshed ones, and there are plenty of the refrigerator size watermelons too.
The Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa, if you really want to go that route, I'd go online and take a look at what they've got in their on their website. They've got a website,
right?
And the heirloom is what they certainly specialize in, heirloom varieties. So,
So I, for seed saving of anything in southeast Wisconsin, the number of days at the most I should be looking at would be what? In general,
well, it's going to depend on the crop. Some of the tomatoes are, for example, at the shortest would be some of the determinant varieties that are like 65 days. Others are 85 to 90 days. Probably 120 days is, you know, about
what you're going to get.
But what you need to think about is the crop one that is cross-pollinated or is it self-pollinated? If it's self-pollinated, they often will come true. So things like tomatoes and peas and beans. I was just thinking, I have a whole presentation and a list of this stuff back at the office, but I don't remember it all off the top of my head. Lettuce you can collect seeds from, but cucurbits, the squash, and the cucumbers and the melons are not real good for that unless you've got an heirloom variety. And Larry's suggestion about seed savers is a real good one.
Yes, have to do some isolation.
That's another thing, is making sure that even if your crop is cross-pollinated or self-pollinated, you need to have like 300 feet of distance often between them. And for most people with a small yard, that doesn't work. But if you're a market gardener, that's Could what work, you need work. To look at. I believe we do have some, you might want to check out the Learning Store. There are some new publications for market gardeners that you might want to take a look at.
Yeah. There's even a, and actually, though, it's in January, isn't it? There's a market gardener.
Yeah, I think that one is, yeah.
It's past, but yeah. One for you to think about for next year with UW Extension.
No, it's through CIAS with John Hendrickson. It's
that's
a three-day
right.
market gardener course that I highly recommend. It's here in Madison.
And you might even contact them now, even though the time has passed.
Right. They can give you more resources.
Yeah.
I will do that.
Yeah, so that's a CIAS, which is
Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems.
Okay. John Hendrickson.
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Rachel in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling about my yard that took quite a hit with the drought last summer, and I'm anticipating many small to large patchy spots, and just wondering what your suggestions are for tackling that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are a lot of different ways you can go. Well, there are two main different ways you can go. One is by seed and one is by sod. One by land, one by seed. So if you have a larger patch and you want to, for example, it's in your front yard and you want to make sure that it's coming along really well, you know, if it's a very visible area, you might want to invest in sod, but sod, of course, is much more expensive than seed. So sometimes people will just use sod for smaller areas. Do keep in mind that if this is a particularly droughty area and we continue to have the same sort of weather pattern, that the type of seed that you put in is important. One thing you don't want to do is use a seed mix that has a whole lot of annual rye. That's not real, you know, it's annual for one thing. And even the perennial rye is not as desirable as the fescues and Kentucky bluegrass. I'm actually advising people to take a look at their landscape this year and see whether maybe some other type of ground cover. Maybe you want to put in a bed of sedums and shrubs or something like that, mm-hmm. depending on what you're looking at. But yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be looking for grass seed this spring. I expect it'll be a real popular item in the nurseries and garden centers.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks.
Is there a particular time that's best to seed?
Well, either spring. You don't want to do it in the middle of summer or fall.
Yeah.
As soon as Yeah, as soon as, you know, like April, 15th of April or so. The thing is that you don't want the seeds to germinate and then freeze. So you may want to wait until, say, the 30th of April or even a little bit later than that. But usually mid to late April. And then if you're going to seed in the fall, they recommend that you get it in September, early September.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Karen in Madison coming up next. By the way, we have some open lines. You can get on with your question at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening to this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Karen in Madison has a question for you. Lisa,
yes.
Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I used to have a beautiful lawn a couple of years ago, and now I'm getting these large patches of a little short, it looks like a grass, but it's just taking over my whole lawn. And do you know what that is and what I can do about it?
Does it pull up in...
Yes.
Okay, that's probably bent grass.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you were growing a golf Gulf green, that would be great. But it is kind of problematic. About the only thing that you can do other than, you know, you can spray it to kill it off, or you can pull it up and then reseed, or you can put in new sod, but you need to try and get it. Particularly, you want to make sure that you get it before it goes to seed. So if you see it starting to produce any seed stalks, that's something. Okay. But it generally, I don't see it seed very much here. It's mostly those creeping rhizomes that, stolons that cause the problem. So, I do hear about that, particularly in areas that don't drain very well, or where you have heavy clay, it can sometimes be an issue. Yeah.
Kind of funny because golf courses, they're always trying to keep it, and bluegrass keeps getting in there.
Are you saying then if I just pulled it out by hand, which would take a long time, and just reseed it, that's all I have to do?
Yeah, that's about the best that you can do. Now, make sure that you don't use any weed and feed products there. Okay. Anywhere that you're putting down seed, you don't want to use weed and feed because it's got a pre-emergent herbicide in there that will keep your seed from germinating. So any reseeding that you do, make sure you're not using a product like that. And make sure that the grass that you're putting in, look and see what it's got in the label. You want a good proportion of Kentucky bluegrass and fescue.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Frank in Milwaukee sent us an email. He wonders if you and the other county extension folks specialize in particular kinds of plants. In your position, you have to be kind of a generalist, because you get such a broad range of questions. Now, there may be a county ag agent who is specializing more in crops, alfalfa, corn, or what have you.
Yeah, we get people who have all kinds of different expertise. My particular background is in woody ornamentals and perennials, annuals. As you grow into the job, you learn more. And one of the things I just cherish about my job is getting to answer questions that I don't know the answer to, because then I get to look them up and I get to learn something. So I've learned a lot about fruits and vegetables. There's a lot to learn out there.
Oh, yeah.
But generally, the agronomic crops, you want to talk to the ag person at the office. So the corn, the soybeans, the alfalfa. And sometimes we have people that have more of a specialization in growing commercial vegetables in the office, and other times not. So that's how we connect to the specialists at the university. Your county is your sort of funnel that will help connect you with knowledge from the specialists, and our publications as well help fill in wherever we're lacking.
or don't have time. You know, you don't have the time to answer everybody.
Well, that's
sometimes
true.
The publications can serve that purpose of answering.
And our Master Gardener volunteers are great. I didn't have them answering the horticulture helpline, I would have a problem.
Talk about a wonderful group of people. Man,
yes.
Man. Well, Chris in Linden Station has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Chris. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate your call.
I have a question about, I was interested in either growing, I can't even think of it now. I've been sitting here listening.
Matt Moss?
Yes, moss and or like a wild grass in my front yard that wouldn't obviously grow too tall. And I was wondering if that was a possibility or not.
Sure. The moss, there are various purveyors of moss. If you just search on the internet, you can get the spores, and sometimes they will send you some of the little moss sods as well, or kind of a crumbly mix. Now, moss will grow best in shaded areas with even moisture that has a slightly acid pH. So you need to be a little careful with your siting for that, and you certainly need to keep it well watered. There are also mixtures that you can use. Sometimes people will, they'll get a patch of moss that's already growing in their yard. You grind it up in a like a milkshake blender type of mm-hmm. thing. You add some buttermilk, and then you can put that down on the area where you want it to grow and keep it watered in, and sometimes that'll help. Some people will paint buttermilk on pots that they want to grow moss on. Mm-hmm. So lots of interesting stuff there with the moss.
And if you're just interested or worried about something you don't have to mow very often, mm-hmm. the other option is a sort of a low, no-mow. Yep. There are some no-mow mixtures out there, aren't there?
Yes, there are. Now, you need to have good drainage. We've tried some out at the extension office where we have very heavy clay and kind of a low spot, and it didn't work so well. Those are mostly fescues. There are places in town, in Madison, I'm sure that you can order it on the internet as well. If you look for no-mow grass, the thing is it's not really no-mow, and you do have to mow it a couple times a year. But usually that'll grow about 6 inches. That's about as tall as it's going to get.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Now, with the sandy soil that I live in, you said that would work well?
Sandy.
Huh? Sandy. Okay, you're
Hero
in
Lynn. County's mostly sandy.
Yeah. It's better than heavy clay. What I would do is I would try it in a small spot and see how it does for you. And, you know, before you invest in it large scale. And, you know, make sure and keep it well watered while it's germinating this first year and getting established. But yeah, it does much better on sandier, well-drained soils. Pure sand, maybe not. So you might want to get a soil test. And
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, and tell them what you're trying to grow and see what the recommendations are. You may need to add some organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. That's a great service. If you know, get that soil test and say, hey, I want to grow this on this.
Mm-hmm.
What do I need to do? And then you'll get a nice
report
response.
Back. Yeah, it tells you what your phosphorus and potassium, and if you need to add any nitrogen, and if you need to add organic matter, raise or lower the pH, all kinds of wonderful stuff.
Judy in Grafton. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm so pleased to talk with you. I did a lasagna garden 2 years ago, and this last summer, I had great expectations for my garden, and it didn't happen. Now, I did it. I got the book. I did the layers. The only problem I think I did was the last layer, towards the top, I put horse manure on. My daughter rides, and she brought some horse manure. I think it may not have been composted enough. So I did not have a good garden last year.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
my question now is, this spring, should I get a load of soil and rototill it all in, or I'm not sure what to do now for this year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it wasn't composted last year, it ought to
sure
be, by
is now.
Be by this time.
I don't think you probably need to worry about rototilling it all up. Any of the excess nitrogen should probably have dissipated by now if that was the problem with it. Did you ever dig down into it and see, and did you use transplants or did you use seed?
I used seeds, and the carrots and red beets and things, some of them didn't even come up. The carrots never came up.
Okay.
I got some red beets, I got some beans, but they weren't good, healthy plants.
Yeah. I think that for lasagna gardens that transplants work better.
Uh-huh.
And so you might want to start your seeds inside, like for tomatoes or so on. Now, certainly with the root crops, you can't do that. You have to direct seed those. It may have been the problem with the horse manure. Also, if you used any grass clippings that had been treated.
I used all mine, and I don't do any fertilizing.
Okay. Yeah, I think they work better myself with with transplants, especially when you're first learning how to work with them. So I would give that a try, but I don't think you need to worry about plowing the whole thing up. One thing you do need to worry about a little bit is making sure that the water is penetrating all the way through, because sometimes if you have a real like thick layer of leaves, sometimes it kind of gets stuck there.
Do you think if I want to plant carrots, should I make a wider or deeper trough and put more soil in that?
Yes.
And put those seeds in there instead of just
That's a good idea.
Carrots need a lighter soil that doesn't have many rocks in it. They don't like heavy soil very well. So even some soilless mix put in there, or some peat moss or something to keep it light would be helpful.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Cherie in Port Wing, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thank you. I need a suggestion for a very tiny problem area. I have a north-facing little strip, only about 18 inches wide between a sidewalk and a porch. And, of course, hosta grows well there.
That's just what I was going to suggest.
Right. And I've got hosta. And it gets a lot of moisture, and it gets late afternoon summer sun. And I can plant impatiens. But I really need something a little higher, and I was looking for something perennial that might be a burst of color. I'm looking for a red. But I should also mention that when the guy comes down to snowblow the sidewalk, it also gets heaped up with heavy, dense snow in the winter. Any ideas?
Let me ask, do you also put salt on the sidewalk?
Well, a little, but not tremendous amounts.
Okay. Because that certainly will, you know, especially when it gets shoveled onto that area, that will limit the types of plants you can grow.
There's probably some salt that gets into that area. But, of course, the hostas have never minded.
No, the hostas are as long as they're in shade and they get good moisture, they will handle some salt.
And then also I've grown impatiens and pansies and certainly mint.
Okay.
Daylilies, did you ever try them? Of course, they need a little more sun.
They need a little more sun.
I don't have enough sun. I have daylilies on the other side of the building.
Yeah.
I was looking for something red.
Yeah. Boy. I was thinking about columbine, but it's not going to bloom for terribly long, but there are some red columbine that might do okay there. What you might want to do, I know you want perennials, but there are some like shade coleus that have a lot of red in the foliage.
I've been lucky with
that.
Coleus too.
Yeah.
I really wanted a perennial at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe Spigelia. You might want to check
that. What's that again?
It's Spigelia, and it's got some red. And the other thing to remember with perennials, as much as I love them, is that most of them are only going to flower for about 3 weeks.
I might be looking more for a red foliage.
Oh, okay. Again, a perennial that will keep red foliage in a north location is going to be tough to find.
Oh, okay.
I'm barking
up the wrong tree.
Well, you could try some of the coral bells that have purple foliage. Some of the ones that I found that do the best are plum pudding. I like sugar plum. That's kind of a purple. And Georgia peach. You might want to try those.
Yeah, worth a try. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jackie in Milwaukee wants to know if it's okay to melt snow and use the water for her indoor plants. Any problem with doing that?
I'm just thinking. I don't think that there would be, as long as, you know, there's no salt in it.
I can't see why.
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I wouldn't go too close to the ground, because when we have heavy snow, sometimes we get snow mold. that grows in the turf, you know, when it's been piled up there. But the stuff near the top, I would think, as long as there's no, you know, salt in it, it would probably
be
okay.
Fine.
I would try it on a couple, though, before
you... Yeah, yeah. And realize that you can put a lot of snow to get a very little amount of water.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what, a foot of snow to make an inch?
Something like that. Dalton and Mosinee, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have two questions for you guys.
Okay.
My first one is my parents and I were planting dill in our garden, but it didn't grow well. I don't know if there's a certain type of season or a time where you're supposed to plant it.
Usually people can't get rid of
that stuff. That's usually really easy to grow.
Do you have old seed maybe?
Well, I think we did use old seeds, yes.
Because usually it's pretty easy to grow. I would just put it out. Where are you located again?
Mosinee,
okay. Probably like the 20th of May, and it should do fine.
I'd get some new seed.
Yeah, that definitely. There's mammoth dill. There's a grandma. Oh, I forget what it's called. Grandma something's dill that I've had really good luck with those. Try some new seed with that. And maybe a different spot.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. And we have Charlie in La Crosse emailed in to say, I currently live in an apartment, don't have much experience in gardening or exterior space to do it. Any advice on where to start? I'd love to grow my own vegetables, but I don't know where to begin. Could do some container gardening if you
have. That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, raised beds, container gardening. We have a great publication at the Learning Store on container gardening, square foot gardening. You can grow tomatoes in a 5-gallon bucket as long as you've got drainage holes and sufficient light. And there should be some really good information in that publication on how to do that.
So that's at the University of Wisconsin. Well, let's see, what is it? LearningStore.com.
UWEX.edu.
LearningStore.UWEX.edu. And you'll find that container gardening is a good publication.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Let's go to Kirk in Westfield next. Hi, Kirk.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
There was a brief mention of Nomo turf grass.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to comment on the discussion as to which soil types it does well on. Up here in Marquette County, we have Prairie Nursery,
mm-hmm.
who supplies the grass both through their retail store locally as well as shipping it out. And it does very well on dry, sandy soils and is quite drought tolerant. So I just wanted to make that mention.
Oh, good point.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. It, being mostly fescues, it typically does. I just wasn't sure how sandy we were talking.
Right.
Yeah.
It definitely up here in sand country, it does quite well.
That's great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Kirk.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. All right. You know, that happens pretty often on Garden Talk. You know, somebody calls in and offers some additional information that they've learned or through experience or what have you.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about this program.
Yeah, that's for sure. And speaking of that, there's actually a couple of open lines. 1-800-642-1234, the number, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment. John in Richland Center, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering, what's the best time of year to prune my apple tree?
Well, now, as a matter of fact.
Excellent time.
Usually you want to do it during the dormant season. We don't recommend before January, but I like to do it in March because the snow starts to go down a little bit and you're not floundering around quite so much as you would be in February, and it's usually a little warmer. You can often wait till almost the end of the month, but you want to make sure that the buds aren't starting to come out. Now, last year we had 80 degrees in March, so you can't always just say, well, March is the best time. When the tree is dormant is the best time, but now would be great. Nice sunny weekend coming up. mm-hmm. on some areas. And, we have a great publication again at the Learning Store called Training in Pruning Fruit Trees that will tell you exactly what to do, how to make the cuts, what kind of hierarchy to use. You take out your crossing and your diseased or dead branches first and move on to shaping and making sure that you have 60-degree angles between the branches so you get good sun penetration and good fruit production. It's all in there. It's really, go to learningstore.uwex.edu and put in training apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Barbara in Gotham, hi.
Hi. Hi, Larry. I wanted to mention I've been with you guys since you began.
Oh. Wow.
Yes, and I just love all the shows I have had on constantly during the day and evening now. So I have a question. I want to try and make a windscreen and a noise screen out of some kind of tree. And I saw advertised in a garden book, they have these Ohio buckeye trees for sale.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen them growing in Wisconsin, so I was curious to know if they would survive.
Well, they will probably survive. They're, I believe, zone 4 or 5. The issue is that there are some foliar diseases with some of the buckeyes. Not to say that they're not gorgeous, gorgeous trees, and I love them, but many of them are very susceptible to foliage spot. If you wanted a buckeye or a horse chestnut of some kind, I would look for a disease-resistant one.
Okay.
There are many species.
Is it true that they have lower, branches that come out closer to the ground than most trees? Or
It depends on how they've been pruned. If they are not limbed up very high, they certainly can grow lower branches, but they don't usually sucker all that much, depending on the type of...
How close can you plant them then?
To a house?
Or to each other?
I'm doing it against Highway 14. I live right alongside the highway, and I'm trying to cut down some of the noise.
You know, you're not going to...
the irritation.
Yeah. I think you would probably be better off with conifers, actually, for that. And usually what they recommend is a mix of conifer and deciduous species for noise reduction. I'm trying to remember. I thought the DOT had, the Department of Transportation had some information on that. But we might have something at the Learning Store, too.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I'm not remembering anything at the Learning Store, but there might be something there.
Yeah.
We can actually try and look that up. But the Department of Transportation, you might go to their site too. But definitely you're going to have better luck with conifers. Now, you may, that's
because
probably
they don't lose their needles. They're deciduous species lose their leaves. And so you get better.
Yeah, well, I'm not real rich.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for something that would be, pretty simple to place because I'm older and I'm low income and that kind of thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You might want to check at the Arbor Day Foundation website. Do you have internet access?
Can you get on the...
No? Okay.
My son could, but he's kind of busy. I was just thinking about that, too, because there was in the paper this week, at Center Paper, Richard Center Paper, that they're getting people to come in and pack all those trees for distribution.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What you might want to...
What kinds they would possibly have.
Yeah. Some counties also do Arbor Day activities where they carry trees and shrubs that are bare root, but you might want to go to your local library and ask them to do an internet search for the Arbor Day Foundation and see if you can get some saplings and so on.
Yeah, good idea. Thank you very much for calling, Barbara. Appreciate it. We had an lots of people online, and we got lots of emails. Larry Mueller here, my guest Lisa Johnson, who is Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio on this edition of Garden Talk. We visit with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening in. Mona in New Berlin has a question.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Lisa. I love your show.
Thanks, Mona.
I hate it when I miss it. Anyway, my question has to do with my vegetable garden, which I've had for about, maybe 7-8 years now. And last year, I was just inundated with insects. First are the Japanese beetles, which I've had for 2 years. But we got these creepy-looking hornworms in the tomatoes.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They just showed up, and wow, were they something. And then we got the funny-looking little beetles all over my cucumbers. And generally, I didn't see these things until I'm ready to, you know, harvest crops. And at that time, I don't like to spray things.
Sure.
You know, because we're going to be eating them. So I'm just wondering, you know, what do I watch for and how can I treat them early on this year?
Okay. Let's take it one thing at a time here. The first thing is I need to ask you if you rotate your vegetable crops.
I do as much as I can. Now, my garden isn't the biggest, and I do try to rotate, yes.
Okay, excellent, because mm-hmm. that always helps cut down on pest populations,
right.
whether they be diseases or insects. And sometimes if people have a real small space, I advise them to start growing some things in pots,
mm-hmm.
Particularly things like tomatoes or cucumbers, because they tend to be really prone to a lot of diseases and insects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the Japanese beetles, unfortunately, are you near a golf course by chance?
No, we're sort of the edge of town.
Okay, well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But the bad news is that when Japanese beetles first move into an area, they are a terrible problem for a few years, mm-hmm. usually 5 years or so, and then they start to level off a little bit. You can also, you know, if you have neighbors that water their lawns copiously or you water your lawn a lot, that will tend to increase their population because they like to feed on those turf roots. One thing I can advise you not to do is don't use those Japanese beetle traps, because research shows that that brings them in 4 times as many as you would have had without the traps.
I tried that last year.
That may be why you
had
more beetles.
That was not a good idea.
It seems like a good idea, and it might be in a rural area where, you know, you might be able to put it 300, 400 feet away from your garden, but you still end up bringing in a lot of the little guys.
Okay.
And if you are growing raspberries, you have linden trees, birch trees, those are, and roses are really at the top of their...
Oh, yeah.
Grapes.
Yeah, grapes.
Oh, dear.
Then you know you're going to have problems with those.
Okay.
You can try 70% neem oil. Because they're around for so long, we don't recommend much that's toxic. Because then you end up spraying stuff all the time. And you still will end up with neem oil spraying a lot. Then I'm assuming with the cucumbers, were they kind of grayish-blue?
Yes.
Insects? Okay,
yeah.
They're probably squash bugs.
Okay.
And we have a fact sheet on squash bugs at the horticulture website, the Wisconsin horticulture website, or you can go to the PDDC if you just do a search on PDDC.
PDDC
for Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and scroll down to insects. There's a great fact sheet on getting rid of squash bugs.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
And it works. Right. Thanks, Mona.
All right. Oh, and what about those ugly hornworms?
You know,
hornworms.
Typically they aren't, you know, you'll get a few of them 1 year and then not so many the next. Although one can tend to do a lot, I would just keep watch for them this year now that you're aware of them. But usually they don't come back in big numbers.
Oh, good. Okay. Terrific. Well, thanks for your help.
Thanks, Mona. Thanks a lot for calling. And Kel in Sugar Camp, hello to you.
Oh, Hi, Larry. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
I had a quick question. I had listened to a garden show when I lived down in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and somebody had a recipe for making your own pots. It was a particular proportion of cement, peat moss, and perlite, and you could make any shape you wanted. They'd be light.
Yep.
They'd even be lend themselves to the moss.
Girl. Yeah. There's like a hyper tufa is one of the things. If you do a search on hyper tufa, T-U-F-A, that is a perlite, peat moss, and I believe sand mix. And usually what they'll tell you to do is to get like a Rubbermaid tub or something and drill a hole in it for drainage, and then you can kind of pack this stuff around it like a mold. Or even a styrofoam container.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's typically what they use. It does take a while to cure and so on, and it's best to do it when it's warmer out.
Oh, sure.
But I know one of our master gardeners had a workshop on it a while ago, so I'm sure you can find information on hyper tufa.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is very cool.
You don't have the recipe for just making it yourself.
Though. Not off the top of my head, but you can find that on the internet pretty easily.
Thank
you.
Stone Mountain's pretty cool.
I don't have a computer. So.
Oh,
go
okay.
to your local library and have them look up hyper tufa for you.
You got a little.
Okay. I'll do that.
Yeah, you should. And Stone Mountain was a pretty cool place.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a nice place to be from, I think.
Cool.
Some relatives in that area.
You know, I was just thinking also their local extension office might have the recipe as well.
Oh, sure. Yes. That's another place to go, Kels. So the extension office, or if you go to the library, one thing I found about the most caring people and the whole helpful people in the whole world.
They are wonderful.
Are the librarians. Mm-hmm. Man, they're great. They are right up there with master gardeners. John in Menominee Falls. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
Good. Hey, I'm calling with two questions for you, actually.
Okay.
First of all, I'm going to be starting square foot gardening this spring.
Oh, cool.
And I'm wondering about the difference between perlite and vermiculite, specifically safety-related, you know, with the asbestos issue with the vermiculite and stuff.
Okay. The story that I have on vermiculite is that it used to be more of an issue with the asbestos. I mean, there are still issues because it tends to be found in the same sort of areas where they mine the vermiculite. But okay. I know they've got better safety protocols in place than they used to. If you have any vermiculite that's older, like from the 80s or 90s, I would not use it. Most of it came from the Libby mine in, I believe, Montana, and that mine was eventually closed because of the problem with asbestos in vermiculite. The perlite is a much chunkier material. It doesn't hold water, really. It's just used to keep the soil fluffy. The vermiculite is much better for cation exchange and for holding water. I don't want to steer you away from using vermiculite, but old stuff I wouldn't use.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the new stuff you can get that's readily available is all pretty safe?
Yeah.
And the, I don't know if you have, do you have the book on square foot gardening?
I do.
But the new edition of the book is, the old edition's great too. But.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a soil mix that they recommend, actually, using a soilless mix. And you might also want to check, I believe there's a publication, an EPA publication on vermiculite. Again, if you use if you do an internet search, you should come up with that. That's the best advice I have for vermiculite.
All right.
So when we look for vermiculite in the store, does it need to be certified or anything, or you just make the assumption that it's all safe at this point in time?
Well, I would say most brands, you know, what you might want to do is look at the company's website and see if they have anything on whether they, you know, they have safety protocols or
okay.
That's worth checking out. Sure.
Yeah. Gotcha. And I've got a second question for you, if that's okay. In Menominee Falls, we live on the edge of a subdivision where most of the water runoff from the streets during rainstorms kind of goes into our backwoods,
mm-hmm.
Which is primarily elm, which are dying, mm-hmm. and buckthorn and a bunch of other that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I'm looking to introduce some other kind of things into there. I'm assuming like a willow would thrive back there with all the water.
Sure. Or you may want to look into building a rain garden, and there's a good publication on that, too, at the Learning Store and the DNR.
Yeah, it's a great idea. The Learning Store would has that publication, and I highly recommend, mm-hmm. John, you take a look at that.
And also Laura Gell's trees that grow in are flooding. She has a publication on flooding at the Learning Store and recommendations for trees that handle that.
Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening can be such a pleasure. Spring is just right around the corner, and if you're looking forward to getting out and into the dirt and you're looking for some ideas, you have come to the right place. Larry Mueller here. Lisa Johnson, our guest today on Garden Talk. She's the Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Glad to have her along. Thank you for listening in. Lots of callers online to visit with her already. The number is 1-800-642-1234. So since every line is filled, I think we just, let's empty one. Let's go to Gail. Let's go to Gail in Brookfield. Hi, Gail. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
How are you?
Just fine.
I was calling to find out a variety of pampas grass that would grow in the Brookfield area that would give me the big plumes.
Yeah.
There are pampas grass varieties that most of them are hardy to zone 5, and you should be zone 5 there, if not zone 6.
Okay.
There is some pampas grass that is only hardy to zone 7 as well. I'm just trying to think of where you can find a particular variety. There is a really good website. It's called the Flower Factory.
The Flower Factory? Okay.
Yeah, and they have a number of different kinds of ornamental grasses. And you might want to try looking there for some that would be hardy in this area.
Okay.
I know there are many, many other purveyors of ornamental grasses as well. That one just comes to mind because I was looking at the catalog the other day. But yeah, particular varieties, you know, I could give you some for maiden grass. I could give you some for many other kinds, but I don't have one in mind particularly for pampas grass.
I'm trying to create a big shield. I have a big solar panel in my backyard, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to kind of block it. So I wanted a variety that would winter over and then still kind of look cool in the winter and then come back.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, we do have some of the maiden grasses, which are the miscanthus. There are a number of those that are pretty tall. There are also some of our native prairie grasses that I could recommend. In particular, there's a variety called North Wind that is pretty tall. Now,
Matt Wind, M-A-T-T?
North, as
north.
In the direction, North Wind.
Oh, okay.
It's named after, a nursery that's around this area. And it's a taller variety. The miscanthus, though, tend to have the better-looking heads during the winter. And either one of them, and even the pampas grass, if you get real heavy, wet snow, they tend to fall over. So there is a problem with that. But the switchgrass, North Wind, or some of the other switchgrass varieties, or miscanthus, I would also recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Gail. Sharon in Verona. Hi.
Hi, this is Sharon. Hi, Larry and Lisa. I'm calling to comment on the previous call about the lasagna gardening.
Yeah.
Is this Sharon Wagner? Hi, Sharon. She's a master gardener.
If you would catch me at it.
That's all right.
That's okay. Okay.
I've done lasagna gardening for a couple of years, and I did do it last year. And I did plant seeds. And Roger Reynolds, the proponent of lasagna gardening, mentioned that when you're doing seeds, you make that trough and you put compost down.
Yeah.
Put the seed on top and then compost again to get good soil seed contact.
Right.
And I had really good germination.
Excellent. I think probably the horse manure, even that the other caller was had used, even though it has a pretty good consistency, it probably just was too fresh. And even with the compost, you need to be sure and have, you know, really nice, light, fluffy compost. If it's too heavy, that can be a problem. Also, I think the type of seed that you use, what did you grow last year?
Well, actually, I did several. I did beans, squash, pumpkins, beets. What else did I do? Lettuces.
Yeah. Now, all those have bigger seeds than carrots, for example. Carrots, I think, can be really, really tough. But the beets, the other caller still had problems with. Those are a little bit smaller seed. So I'm glad to hear that you had good luck with it. I believe you said Roger Reynolds, right?
Yeah.
Was the one.
Yeah.
He has a really good mix.
I believe in his instructions. I don't remember if it was online or when he was on the radio and that he made that mention when planting seeds, because the lasagna garden is just too strawy, like too airy, too loose.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, so those bigger seeds sometimes, I think, or transplants can tend to work a little bit better. And it could be that, you know, the other caller, it was the first time that she'd done it, too. So,
Right. Yep. And I wasn't sure on that. She didn't really specify if she'd put the compost down or not. And so I thought I'd just give you a call.
Well, thanks,
Sharon.
Good to hear from you.
Comment.
Appreciate the call. And Roger Reynolds, Roger's been on the show many a time, too. He's a great guy.
Yeah. He's got a really nice mix for lasagna gardening and really great advice.
Absolutely. Jan in La Crosse says, you know, I always have some extra seeds left over and I use them the next year. Does that make them less effective if they're old?
Well, if it's just one season, no, not generally. Most seeds will last for several years. Usually about 3 years is where you start to lose potency. Or viability is probably what I should say. If you are not sure that your seeds are going to germinate, take 10 of them, put them in a moist paper towel and in a Ziploc bag and leave them someplace warm for however long it says on the package it takes them to germinate. And then take a look at those 10 seeds and you can figure out a percentage. If you got 5 of them to germinate, you'll probably have 50% germination. If 7 of them, you have 70%. So that's always if you have enough seeds to test that way. But generally, we recommend that you keep them in a cool, dry location and try and use as fresh of seed as you can.
Dave in Eau Claire wonders where you can find artichoke seeds.
Wow. Darn good question there, Dave.
I think Burpee has them.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen Jerusalem artichoke seeds in some of the catalogs, but not...
They're not everywhere.
Yeah.
You go online and take a look, but I'm pretty sure Burpee's
got
them.
Yeah, maybe try Johnny's. Johnny's selected seeds.
Barb in Oshkosh. Barbara, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I love the program. I listen all the time to Garden Talk.
Thank you.
Now, my question is about Brussels sprouts. I grew Brussels sprouts for the first time last year. They were delicious to eat. I loved them. But I had no leaves. All I had was veins because something ate all the leaves. And my neighbor told me I should spray, but by the time she told me, I had Brussels sprouts, and I was afraid if I had spray.
Sure.
You know, I don't know. How do you grow Brussels sprouts?
Well, I think that probably what you're getting is one of the, they call them cabbage butterflies. There's the imported cabbage worm. They tend to be underneath the leaves, and they're green, so they're a little bit hard to see. What you need to do is just scout for them all season. Every time that you're outside watering, flip over some leaves because they tend to be on the underside, and if you see them, you can remove them by hand. That's one of the most effective and organic ways to do it. They're those little yellow and white butterflies that you see fluttering around. And they lay their eggs in the spring. If you flip over the leaf, sometimes you'll see them there all clustered together. And you can squish the eggs, you know, and then you won't have any butterflies developing. But yeah, those caterpillars can really do a number on the leaves, and not only on Brussels sprouts, but also cabbages and any of those mustard family plants.
And then the second question I have is, when is the proper time to pick the Brussels sprouts?
Generally, it depends on the variety, but usually they're, I think they're 50, I should look in my book, but 50, 65 days to maturity.
Yeah.
Check on the package, your seed package, and it should tell you how many days to maturity. If you plant them in the fall, and many people do, they'll usually plant them in late August and then harvest sometime in September or October.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You get the sweeter ones if you do it in the fall.
So if they plant them in the fall, are they planting seeds or plants?
Usually seeds in the fall.
Okay.
Yeah, in the spring, though, you often will use transplants because it takes a long time to get them to germinate.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
And then throw some of them on the grill sometime.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're really good on the grill.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Barbara. Appreciate the call. Yeah, have a little oil, and oh, man, they're good. Amy in Appleton, hello.
Hi, Larry and Lisa. I'm the daughter of a man who sold perlite for over 50 years, and I just thought I'd kind of distinguish between the two, as I was brought up to believe. Perlite is a volcanic rock
right. That
is mined and crushed and then popped like popcorn.
Right. They heat it up to like 1,600 degrees, and it gets a lot of air in it.
The mines are absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Vermiculite is kind of a plant animal based fossilized material from ancient oceans that have dried up and gone away.
Yeah, it's very similar to mica. It comes in little flat sheets, and then they grind it up. And
I just
it's
thought
like,
you know, there's people that spend their whole lives in the perlite business.
Thanks, Amy.
And he never had a garden.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, perlite is great stuff.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. That was a great call, too. That's wonderful. Bruce in Saratoga, what's on your mind? Hi.
Hello, Larry, and I really loved your show. I try to listen to it every week.
Thank you.
I have a comment. I heard a lady mention earlier problems with Japanese beetles, and I think almost all of us have had problems with Japanese beetles in the last two or three years. Well, last year, I stumbled upon a product that really works, and it's non-toxic. And I'll just describe it very briefly. It's called Surround. I think it's made by DuPont.
Yeah, it's kale and clay, and there may be some permethrin in it. And it's a kind of grayish, is it?
Right. And what it does, you can spray any crop that is vulnerable to Japanese beetles. And in our case, that's most of them except the tomatoes. The Japanese beetles will light on it, and I've observed this, and the prickly clay irritates their feet and they quickly fly away. Now, it's not 100% kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
No.
In other words, it sure works well, but it's like I said, every once in a while, if there's an exposed leaf or the rain washes some of it off or whatever, then you got an issue. And the other issue is it's not the easiest stuff to apply. You have to have a 5-gallon bucket and some way to mix it up pretty good, because it is a suspension. It will
right.
mellow out.
You have to keep it agitated so that it doesn't come out as suspension.
But the great thing is, if you get some on your vegetables and you don't get it washed off, you can eat it, and it's not going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Yep, that is true.
Totally inert.
Yeah. They use it quite a bit in the organic apple business, but of course then you have to get it off before you can yeah. sell the apples, because nobody wants to buy an apple that looks like cement.
Yeah.
But yeah, kale and clay in that surround product is a good product.
Thing. Thanks, Bruce.
You bet.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Bill in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, Larry, I have a question for you and your guest regarding the blue, the flowers blue, morning glory and moonflower seed and some tomato seeds that I want to start, you know, like inside mm-hmm. before I plant them. And I want to know what to put them in.
Okay.
Like if I can go buy a package or whatever, and what's the most effective way to get most of them prepared to plant outside?
Okay. We'll start with the tomatoes because they're the easiest. Mm-hmm. The tomatoes, you usually start the third or fourth week of March, at least in our area. Because our last frost date is about the 15th of May. So if you want to put them out the 15th, 20th of May, assuming the weather cooperates, that's when you start the tomatoes. I always recommend using a seed starting media. So something like Jiffy Mix, or you don't want to use potting soil because the pores are too big and it stays too wet. But anything that you can find in your local garden center that's marked for starting seeds is usually a good thing. Now, with the morning glory is going to need to have the seeds soaked for a period of time. You can look on the packet and see what it recommends. Some of them will say overnight. Others will say for an hour before you plant them. They have a really thick seed coat, so they do need to be soaked first. And
I was going to ask, I've heard that scratching the surface lightly can help with that.
Yep, you can do that too. I'm always worried about damaging the seed, though, with the sandpaper, so I like to soak them because it's just easier. I just dunk them in water and leave them there for anywhere from, you know, an hour to overnight. And then you can go ahead and plant those. They probably would be best planted directly outside rather than started inside. Just something about their root system. They're harder to transplant.
When would I do that?
You can do that after the ground has thawed. Usually with morning glories, you're going to want to do that sometime in late May, mid to late May, depending on the weather. And the moonflower, I know, has a really long germination period, and there are some special things you need to do with that. I think you also need to soak the seed, but I would do a search on that because, as I recall, it takes a while to germinate them and you need some special temperatures and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right.
What kind of container would you use for the tomatoes in the morning glory?
I would just use the small. You can either use the market packs, the plastic market packs. With the tomatoes, you'll probably end up having to transplant them to something a little bit bigger. You don't want to start anything in a container that's too big because it'll stay too wet. So small peat pots would be okay, too. Some people use old yogurt containers if they're small with mm-hmm. holes poked in the bottom. So I even have a master gardener that cuts her toilet paper rolls, the
inside roll.
Yeah, the inside cardboard roll, and cuts that in two. And, you know, you can't lift it up for a while until the the roots have spread. But, yeah, you can make a lot of your own containers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
All right. Good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah,
appreciate it. Appreciate the call. Sylvia in Evansville. Hi.
Hi, and thank you again for taking my call. I love the Garden Talk show and listen often, but I haven't heard the question I'm about to rise come up before. And I would like to establish an organic garden in my backyard this summer. It's only 65 feet wide, and my neighbors on either side use lawn services.
Mm-hmm.
And the exposure to chemicals are a concern to me because the companies aren't particularly concerned about the windiness when they're applying the sprays right up to my lot line. And if I can smell a decidedly strong smell, I suppose it's aerosolizing, would this be of concern if I want in my backyard to grow organically? And if so, do you have any suggestions how I might address this?
Oh, that is a problem. A wooden fence would be one suggestion.
Okay.
But yeah, when you can smell it, it is in fact volatilizing. And you are getting, it may be a fairly minute amount, but depending on the chemical, you can have issues with that. Anything that has 2,4-D in it, if it's sprayed on a day that's too hot, it can volatilize. And things like squash and tomatoes are really pretty susceptible to damage from that. So if there's any way you can move your garden more towards the center of your yard, and also using a solid fence, I think would be helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And whitefly, we had somebody that had whitefly in their tomatoes last year, and in the last few seconds, anything we can?
They are not going to overwinter outside. That's the best part of it.
Yeah.
And so she shouldn't have problems with them this year. They're more of a problem indoors and in a greenhouse setting. Outside, the beneficial insects tend to take care of them.
Lisa, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You'll come back, be with us again.
I will try.
All right, Lisa Johnson, our Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. She'll be back. We'll talk with her again about what's going on in your garden and mine. Coming up on Monday, we'll get some tax time advice. Oh, I haven't done my taxes yet. CPA Dale Kunin, she will be along to talk about all kinds of things relating to filling out your taxes. And I got to pay special attention. I bet you do, too. So in the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.